Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. Writer-director Lynn Shelton's new film, Sword of Trust, didn't have a traditional script. It had a scriptment, which is, I think, like a portmanteau of script and treatment, the latter being an outline on steroids, a short story-like version of a film script. This means for the film's 88 minutes, the actors came up with a lot of the material by improvisation. The film stars Marc Maron. Hi, Marc.
Hi.
Playing a pawn shop owner who gets tangled in a plot to try to sell a Confederate sword to quote-unquote collectors who believe it could prove the South won the Civil War. An ensemble featuring Jillian Bell, Michael Watkins, and John Bass, they find themselves mixed up in the world of conspiracy theorists and hate groups. Parts of the world they encounter are not too distant from our current cultural reality, adding another layer to Shelton's farce. Sword of Trust premiered at South by Southwest earlier this year, and it opens in theaters on July 12th. And Lynn and Marc are in the studio. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
So you two, you've known each other. You were a guest on Mark's podcast.
WTF.
Episode 627, to
That's
be exact.
Right.
How did it go from, hey, you're cool, to actually making time to make a project together? Not particularly this one, the first thing you worked on together.
Well, I got to direct Maron a few months after we met. You actually, one of the first things you said on our in our interview on your podcast was that you guys had tried to hire me on Maron before, and I was like, well, yeah, I'll do it. So that was that. Once we found like we had some eerily a lot of things in common, sort of. I don't know, it was like we connected during the actual interview, although it seems like everybody kind of connects to Mark when he does his interviews. But
especially
we kept in touch.
People with peculiar eating habits. We have bonded.
What's hers?
Oh, geez.
Don't go there.
I grew up with, in a house of peculiar eating habits, and I personally have a sort of strange relationship with food, as does Lynn. So, and that's a deep bond. You know, there's intellectual stuff that we have
not
in common,
alone.
Musical taste, but the emotional core of people who have an odd relationship with food is deep and strong.
I can understand that.
So he hired me to direct his TV show based on nothing
services.
Else. No other.
Yeah. Her resistance
exactly.
To
my
craft
resistance
services.
To, yeah, my. Yeah.
No, I when I booked her on the show, I'd watched some of the movies, and I'd always heard about Lynn Shelton, and then you know when I saw the movies and when we talked, I thought it would be good to have her direct Maron, and then when she did, I was kind of what was that, season two?
No, season four.
Oh, wait.
The first two episodes.
Yeah, by that time, I was trying to figure out how to be an actor throughout the course of Maron. I knew that it was going to be difficult in the sense that I was a comic and I'd seen a lot of my peers sort of take that hit first season of their own show and trying to figure out how to do it. It was pretty common, so I knew I would have to take that hit. And as the seasons went on and I became more comfortable and we were taking more chances creatively, Lynn came in. And really, that season was a heavy, weird season. It was completely fictionalized and required a little more heavy lifting on my part as an actor. And she connected with me as a human, but then I grew to trust her as a director. And I'm not so quick to trust people around anything. I'm innately defensive. And she somehow plowed through that. And I began to listen to her, and the results were good. And then she directed my comedy special, and then, you know, we did the movie.
We did a bunch of clothes, too, which helped.
I had nothing to do with that.
I know, but we got to work together, which was really nice. And
yeah.
And then we started writing another movie, actually, together, and mm-hmm. That was just so slow going that I was like, okay, I'm going to write you a part, and you're going to be in it, and we're going to do it, and we did.
I was resisting the finishing of that script, and I still am. I'm still in resistance mode. Of finishing the Lynn Shelton Marc Maron script.
What do you like about her as a director?
Well, she has a good sense of comedy, a good sense of humor, and a good instinct around, you know, how scenes should sort of arc emotionally. So, and also, like, I'm not the easiest person in the world. So if she can get to where I need to be emotionally and explain it to me or make me see it in a way that makes sense to me, it's better. So I trust her that way.
You do better? Or is it just a better experience or both?
No, the performance is better. I mean, you know, experience is always, acting is a little intense. It's not always a great experience for me because it happens quickly and you do these takes and you have to do them again. But a lot of times it's really a matter of like, I think some people have said that I come in hot. That's generally, I'm almost every scene or any way I approach something, it's gonna be like, what is happening? What are we doing? Like that level. And underneath that is sort of like, what's going on? Like it's just getting to the core of what's really happening in the scene as opposed to me being just emotionally reactive.
You said you like working with actors. That's what you like. It's what you like about TV specifically is because you can get in there with the actors. Why? Why do you like that part of it?
I mean, honestly probably connects to one of my first creative outlets, which was acting. Mm-hmm. And so I started acting when I was a kid, around 11 or 12. I started taking acting classes and I was in productions around Seattle, Washington, where I was living. And then I got a BA in the theater with an emphasis on acting from the University of Washington. So I was a theater actor, but when I started trying to make a living at it, I just sort of fell out of love with it. I realized it wasn't the healthiest profession for me. It felt like an exercise in narcissism. I developed a small
not to say a
disorder.
Long shot as a career.
Well, yeah, there's that too. But it was, and I just wasn't built. My disposition was not,
you're not built
one.
For it.
I was not built for the auditions and the rejection and it wasn't. Yeah. Anyway, I didn't feel like I had enough agency or sort of waiting around to be chosen, and need permission from somebody else to do your own work. So I started to produce my own work and write, which was great. But I felt disconnected. I went to graduate school in photography. So there's many years when I was really had nothing to do with acting. And then I was making experimental documentaries as a filmmaker and experimental films that had nothing to do with actors. But when I actually directed my first feature film in 2005, I was directing it. I just completely fell in love with actors and acting again because I needed them to fulfill my artistic vision I was completely dependent on them as a filmmaker. And it was so exciting to be able to actually have some partake in the performance itself, but not be doing it myself. Like
that's
it was
interesting. You
it
had
was,
to go away from it,
yeah.
Go all the way around it, come back, but sit kind of in a different chair and be like, "Hey, this is good."
Exactly. And I then remembered why I'd fallen in love with it in the first place. The way that the beauty of being able to connect to other human beings and the other human experiences and create empathy in audiences, for other people. Through great acting, because if you have great acting, great writing, and great acting that can bring out the humanity of another human being, then you can actually relate to. I don't know. I feel like it expands one's compassion and and sense of connection to other humans.
My guests are Lynn Shetland and Mark Maron. We're talking about their new film. We will talk about their new film, Sword
okay.
of Trust. So, the improvisation,
yeah,
aspect of this.
Mm-hmm.
How do you direct that?
Well,
I can tell you. you just unleash a bunch of improvising people,
mm-hmm.
and you kind of tell them what's going on, and then you let them ramble on with each other and get laughs and do all kinds of weird stuff for about 4 or 5 minutes. And then she comes up and goes, "Yeah, but you didn't say the one thing we need to move the story forward. So can we try and do that again and get the one element that we need to connect to the story.
Or the five elements." Like, it was a very plot heavy. Mm-hmm. I asked the actors to do a lot of heavy lifting in terms of laying down the scaffolding of this pretty tightly structured plot. And I've not done that in the past. When I've done, I've directed other improvisational dialogue-wise, they're mm-hmm. improvisational films, but not quite as many elements. As many, sort of pieces that have to be laid out exposition-wise and so on. So, yeah, I asked them to do a lot of that.
And then I would say, like, "Oh, that one was so good. We have to do it again?"
Except even
And then I'd kind of
angrier.
Storm around for a minute. And I'm like, "All right, okay." Yeah, so I'm exciting to work with, I think is a diplomatic way of putting it. The other issue with improvising, especially with the cats that we were doing this movie with, and I did just use the word cats, that
please use jive turkey later.
I will. So we, a lot of them, like, I can improvise within what I do. I'm not a guy that's going to create some broad character that, you know, embodies this insanity. Like, I have to, it sort of has to be within my emotional range to kind of get involved with improvising. And some of the people I was working with were definitely people that could become broad characters, go way over, like, very proficient sort of sketch and improvising actors. And there was a period there, like at the beginning, right when we started doing it, where I was just standing there among these people going nuts, just trying to outdo each other with insane improvisations. And I got off the set and I said to Lynn, I'm like, you better reel some of these folks in or this movie's just going to be chaos. And I'm just going to be this straight man for the whole thing to a bunch of people just going just nuts. And she's like, I understand. And I'll talk to them.
Well, I kept trying to tell him it was his movie, that he was the lead. And
you are the lead.
He didn't believe me.
I didn't know I was the lead until today.
But a lot of it is in the editing. That's the that's the true key to directing these films. I had, along the long, circuitous, unorthodox film school route that I took to get to doing what I'm doing now, I got a BA in theater as an actor. I then got an MFA in photography, and then I was an editor for many years. So I don't think I could be doing what I'm doing now, actually, if I hadn't done any of those things, but particularly editing, and particularly doing improvisational movies. If I hadn't been an editor, I don't think I could work this way. But I'm sort of clocking as we go, you know, during a long meandering take, you know, do I have enough ingredients to put it together in the edit room? And then once I'm in the edit room, I can really, that's where the script is really written, because I'm carving out all of the, you know, I'm sort of, and sometimes leaving some beautiful diamonds and gems on the floor of the cutting room, just because I have to. It's not serving the story, you know, even if it's incredibly funny or brilliant in its own way, each little piece, it has to add up to really helping push the narrative forward or developing the characters in the way that I want them, you know, to arc out or whatever it is. So, but on set, sometimes it's really hard to tell because you don't know what's going to end up on the screen. And it's true that that Mark's character is sort of like the emotionally grounded anchor of this thing. So a lot of his brilliance comes out of, you know, just kind of reacting to all the lunacy around him. But he gets in a lot of funny himself, like a lot of asides and
emotionally grounded is not something you usually hear to describe me in life. So I just realized I really did do a good job acting in this movie.
I should say, you're quite an actor.
Yeah,
yes, you did, Mark.
I do have a serious question about the script.
Yeah.
It's a farce. It goes crazy. It's a caper. But it's about the Confederacy, right? So these people, you go down the rabbit hole of internet, you know, conspiracy theorists who think the South won the war. And you say Confederacy, like, to an African-American person, not funny.
Mm-mm.
Nothing funny about it, right?
Mm-mm.
So how did you work on the script and sort of walk that line between, like, not endorsing, promoting this kind of thing and respecting what the Confederacy means, but also having to make a comedy?
But the device of it is pretty spectacular. The idea that there would be people that ignorant who would be willing to argue, you know, given where society is at this point in time, that the South actually won the war, is so fundamentally ridiculous. Yet because of the culture we live in, you kind of go like, there's people that believe.
Yeah. People ask me all the time, did you make this up or is this a real thing?
Well, there's no doubt people that want the Confederacy to exist.
Yeah.
Right. But the idea that there are people like sort of like, once we prove that war was misrepresented, it's such a beautiful example of angry idiocy that the satire, the satirical element of that idea, and I think the way I respond to it when they try to push that on me is like, well, I think some people would want to know about this. Like, it's sort of a brilliant device that makes the line a little easier to ride, because there is something horrifying about people actually go like, do they really exist? And then I think it really shines a light on that type of kind of elaborate, well-constructed ignorance.
Alternative facts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I wanted to make a film that was culturally relevant, and I definitely wanted to make a film that did not make you want to slit your wrists afterwards because of it's too culturally relevant, you know?
Yeah.
So that was just something that we, you know, were aware of all the time, is how to make it you know, allude to. And we also wanted to raise some stakes for our heroes and make it feel like, you know, they're it, you know, to make it exciting at a certain point. We're going to get in deeper and deeper and deeper until it's in over their heads practically. But at the same time, not really have it be some sort
of a political movie.
Yeah.
Well, what was your reaction then as an African American person in our writing that line?
It was tough. At first when it first hit me, I was like, nothing funny about Confederacy.
Uh-huh.
Nope. But to your point that it's so cartoonish.
Once
the satire started to wash over me, I was like, okay, I get it. All right. But in the beginning,
well, yeah, because it's interesting. Mm. It does level off to be more of a human story.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that device, you know, was something for these humans to move through. And I think that even trying to avoid stereotypical representations of angry Southern rubes.
Yeah.
Like, we sort of humanized some of that. And I do, it's curious to me that, you know, I didn't really take that into mind, how it would impact, you know, how it would be received by African American people.
You did the score.
I did. Yeah. Well, I mean, what does that
mean? I mean, I actually had.
I wanted to get that out there, so we have because we're 45
seconds. Another composer who was attached originally, mm-hmm. and then as I was editing, I kept hearing his music because he does. He's already, you know, if you listen to his podcast, Mark has all of these guitar noodlings in interstitials and stuff, and they were like,
and we used them.
It fits. It fits.
I had hundreds
it
of
fits.
Them.
Yeah.
And we just laid them in.
And then he made a new piece for the end.
The name of the film is Sword of Trust. My guests have been Lynn Shelton and Mark Maron. Thank you so much for coming to the studio.
Thank you, Allison.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. I will meet you back here next time.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.